Jim, quiet, meek Jim, suddenly became a leader. He got busy and reminded the fellows in the plant that they'd always gotten a fair deal from Mr. W., and we didn't need outsiders coming to tell us how to run our affairs. The outsiders left, and as usual, we negotiated our contract like friends, thanks to Jim. Here are two ways to use the Be Human approach to make you a better leader. First, each time you face a difficult matter involving people, ask yourself, what is the human way to handle this? Ponder over this question when there is a disagreement among your subordinates, or when an employee creates a problem. Remember Bob W.'s formula for helping others correct their mistakes. Avoid sarcasm. Avoid being cynical. Avoid taking people down a peg or two. Avoid putting others in their place. Ask, what is the human way to deal with people? It always pays. Sometimes sooner, sometimes later, but it always pays. A second way to profit from the Be Human rule is to let your actions show you put people first. Show interest in your subordinates' off-the-job accomplishments. Treat everyone with dignity. Remind yourself that the primary purpose in life is to enjoy it. As a general rule, the more interest you show in a person, the more he will produce for you. And his production is what carries you forward to greater and greater success. Praise your subordinates to your supervisor by putting in plugs for them at every opportunity. It's an old American custom to admire the fellow who's on the side of the little man. Your subordinates will appreciate your plugs, and their loyalty to you will grow. And do not fear that this will lower your own importance in the eyes of your supervisor. Rather, a man big enough to be humble appears more confident than the insecure man who feels compelled to call attention to his accomplishments. A little modesty goes a long way. Praise your subordinates personally at every opportunity. Praise them for their cooperation. Praise them for every extra effort they put forth. Praise is the greatest single incentive you can give people, and it costs you nothing. Besides, a write-in vote has often overthrown a powerful known candidate. You never know when your subordinates can do you a turn by coming to your defense. Practice praising people. Rub people the right way. Be human. Leadership rule number 3. Think progress, believe in progress, push for progress. One of the most complimentary things anyone can say about you is, he stands for progress. He's the man for the job. Promotions in all fields go to individuals who believe in and push for progress. Leaders, real leaders, are in short supply. Status quoers, the everything's all right, let's don't upset the apple cart folks, far outnumber the progressives. The there's lots of room for improvement, let's get to work and do it better people. Join the leadership elite. Develop a forward look. There are two special things you can do to develop your progressive outlook. 1. Think improvement in everything you do. 2. Think high standards in everything you do. Several months ago, the president of a medium-sized company asked me to help him make an important decision. This executive had built the business by himself and had been functioning as sales manager. Now, with 7 salesmen employed, he decided his next step was to promote one of his salesmen to the job of sales manager. He narrowed the choice down to 3, all of whom were about equal in experience and sales performance. My assignment was to spend 1 day in the field with each man and then report my views on which fellow seemed to be best qualified to lead the group. Each man was told that a consultant would visit him to discuss the overall marketing program. For obvious reasons, they were not told the specific purpose of my visit. 2 of the men reacted pretty much the same way. Both were uncomfortable with me. They seemed to sense that I was there to change things. Each of these men was a real defender of the status quo. Both approved of the way everything was being done. I raised questions about how the territories were laid out, the compensation program, the sales promotional material, every facet of the marketing effort. But on all points, the response was always, everything is okay. On specific points, these two men explained why the present way couldn't and shouldn't be changed. Summed up, both men wanted the status quo to remain the status quo. One of them said to me as he dropped me by my hotel, I don't know exactly why you spent the day with me, but tell Mr. M for me that everything is okay as is. Don't go refiguring anything. The third man was wonderfully different. He was pleased with the company and proud of its growth, but he was not wholly content. He wanted improvements. All day, this third salesman gave me his ideas for getting new business, providing better service to customers, reducing wasted time, revising the compensation plan to give more incentive, all so that he and the company would make more. He had mapped out a new advertising campaign he had been thinking about. When I left him, his parting remark was, I sure appreciate the chance to tell someone about some of my ideas. We've got a good outfit, but I believe we can make it better. My recommendation, of course, was for the third man. It was a recommendation that coincided perfectly with the feelings of the company president. Believe in expansion, efficiency, new products, new processes, better schools, increased prosperity. Believe in and push for progress, and you'll be a leader. As a youngster, I had an opportunity to see how the different thinking of two leaders can make an amazing difference in the performance of followers. I attended a country elementary school, 8 grades, 1 teacher, and 40 children all jammed together inside 4 brick walls. A new teacher was always a big deal. Led by the big boys, the 7th and 8th graders, the pupils set out to see how much they could get away with. One year there was little more than chaos. Every day there were dozens of the usual school pranks, wars of spitballs and paper airplanes. Then there were the major incidents, such as locking the teacher outside the school for half a day at a time, or on another occasion, the opposite, barricading her within the building for hours. Another day, each boy in the upper grades brought his dog into the schoolroom. Let me add that these children were not delinquents. Stealing, physical violence, and deliberate harm were not their objectives. They were healthy kids conditioned by vigorous rural living and needing an outlet for their tremendous pent-up energies and ingenuities. Well, the teacher somehow managed to stay with the school until the end of that year. To no one's surprise, there was a new teacher the following September. The new teacher extracted strikingly different performance from the children. She appealed to their personal pride and sense of respect. She encouraged them to develop judgment. Each child was assigned a specific responsibility, like washing blackboards or cleaning erasers, or practicing paper grading for the younger grades. The new teacher found creative ways to use the energy that had been so misdirected a few months before. Her educational program was centered on building character. Why did the children act like young devils one year and like young angels the next? The difference was the leader, their teacher. In all honesty, we cannot blame the kids for playing pranks an entire school year. In each instance, the teacher set the pace. The first teacher, deep down, didn't care whether the children made progress. She set no goals for the children. She didn't encourage them. She couldn't control her temper. She didn't like teaching, so the pupils didn't like learning. But the second teacher had high, positive standards. She sincerely liked the children and wanted them to accomplish much. She considered each one as an individual. She obtained discipline easily because, in everything she did, she was well-disciplined. And in each case, the pupils adjusted their conduct to fit the examples set by the teachers. We find the same form of adjustment taking place every day in adult groups. During World War II, military chiefs continually observed that the highest morale was not found in units where commanders were easy, relaxed, and lackadaisical. Crack units were led by officers with high standards who enforced military regulations fairly and properly. Military personnel simply do not respect and admire officers with low standards. College students, too, take their cue from the examples set by the professors. Students under one professor cut classes, copy term papers, and connive in various ways to pass without serious study. But the same students under another professor willingly work extra hard to master the subject. In business situations, we again find individuals patterning their thinking after that of the superior. Study a group of employees closely. Observe their habits, mannerisms, attitudes toward the company, ethics, self-control. Then compare what you find with the behavior of their superior, and you discover amazing similarities. Every year, many corporations that have grown sluggish and are headed downward are rebuilt. And how? By changing a handful of executives at the top. Companies and colleges and churches and clubs and unions and all other types of organizations are successfully rebuilt from the top down, not from the bottom up. Change the thinking at the top, and you automatically change the thinking at the bottom. Remember this. When you take over the leadership of a group, the persons in that group immediately begin to adjust themselves to the standards you set. This is most noticeable during the first few weeks. Their big concern is to clue you in, zero you in, find out what you expect of them. They watch every move you make. They think, how much rope will he give me? How does he want it done? What does it take to please him? What will he say if I do this or that? Once they know, they act accordingly. Check the example you set. Use this old but ever accurate quatrain as a guide. What kind of world would this world be if everyone in it were just like me? To add meaning to this self-imposed test, substitute the word company for world so it reads, what kind of company would this company be if everyone in it were just like me? In similar fashion, ask yourself what kind of club, community, school, church would it be if everyone in it acted like you? Think, talk, act, live the way you want your subordinates to think, talk, act, live, and they will. Over a period of time, subordinates tend to become carbon copies of their chief. The simplest way to get high-level performance is to be sure the master copy is worth duplicating. Am I a progressive thinker checklist? A. Do I think progressively toward my work? 1. Do I appraise my work with the how can we do it better attitude? 2. Do I praise my company, the people in it, and the products it sells at every possible opportunity? 3. Are my personal standards with reference to the quantity and quality of my output higher now than 3 or 6 months ago? 4. Am I setting an excellent example for my subordinates, associates, and others I work with? B. Do I think progressively toward my family? 1. Is my family happier today than it was 3 or 6 months ago? 2. Am I following a plan to improve my family's standard of living? 3. Does my family have an ample variety of stimulating activities outside the home? 4. Do I set an example of a progressive, a supporter of progress for my children? C. Do I think progressively toward myself? 1. Can I honestly say I am a more valuable person today than 3 or 6 months ago? 2. Am I following an organized self-improvement program to increase my value to others? 3. Do I have forward-looking goals for at least 5 years in the future? 4. Am I a booster in every organization or group to which I belong? D. Do I think progressively toward my community? 1. Have I done anything in the past 6 months that I honestly feel has improved my community, neighborhood, churches, schools, etc.? 2. Do I boost worthwhile community projects rather than object, criticize, or complain? 3. Have I ever taken the lead in bringing about some worthwhile improvement in my community? 4. Do I speak well of my neighbors and fellow citizens? Leadership Rule Number 4. Take time out to confer with yourself and tap your supreme thinking power. We usually picture leaders as exceptionally busy people, and they are. Leadership requires being in the thick of things, but while it's usually overlooked, it is noteworthy that leaders spend considerable time alone, alone with nothing but their own thinking apparatus. Check the lives of the great religious leaders, and you'll find each of them spent considerable time alone. Moses frequently was alone, often for long periods of time. So were Jesus, Buddha, Confucius, Muhammad, Gandhi. Every outstanding religious leader in history spent much time in solitude, away from the distractions of life. Political leaders, too, those who made lasting names in history for good or bad, gained insight through solitude. It is an interesting question whether Franklin D. Roosevelt could have developed his unusual leadership capacities had he not spent much time alone while recovering from his polio attack. Harry Truman spent much time as a boy and as an adult alone on a Missouri farm. Quite possibly, Hitler would never have achieved power had he not spent months in jail alone, where he had time to construct Mein Kampf, that brilliantly wicked plan for world conquest that sold the Germans in a blind moment. Many of the leaders of communism who proved to be so diplomatically skillful, Lenin, Stalin, Marx, and many others, spent time in jail, where they could, without distraction, plan their future moves. Leading universities require professors to lecture as few as 5 hours per week, so that the professor has time to think. Many outstanding business executives are surrounded all day by assistants, secretaries, telephones, and reports. But follow them around for 168 hours a week and 720 hours a month, and you discover they spent a surprising amount of time in uninterrupted thought. The point is this. The successful person in any field takes time out to confer with himself or herself. Leaders use solitude to put the pieces of a problem together, to work out solutions, to plan, and in one phrase, to do their super thinking. Many people fail to tap their creative leadership power because they confer with everybody and everything else but themselves. You know this kind of person well. He's the fellow who goes to great lengths not to be alone. He goes to extremes to surround himself with people. He can't stand being alone in his office, so he goes prowling to see other people. Seldom does he spend evenings alone. He feels a compelling need to talk with others every waking moment. He devours a huge diet of small talk and gossip. When this person is forced by circumstances to be physically alone, he finds ways to keep from being mentally alone. At times like these, he resorts to television, newspapers, radio, telephone, anything that will take over his thinking process for him. In effect, he says, "Here, Mr. TV, Mr. Newspaper, occupy my mind for me. I'm afraid to occupy it with my own thoughts." Mr. I Can't Stand to Be Alone shuns independent thought. He keeps his own mind blacked out. He is psychologically scared of his own thoughts. As time goes by, Mr. I Can't Stand to Be Alone grows increasingly shallow. He makes many ill-considered moves. He fails to develop firmness of purpose, personal stability. He is unfortunately ignorant of the superpower lying unused just behind his forehead. Don't be a Mr. I Can't Stand to Be Alone. Successful leaders tap their superpower through being alone. You can too. Let's see how. As part of a professional development program, I asked 13 trainees to closet themselves for 1 hour each day for 2 weeks. The trainees were asked to shut themselves off from all distractions and think constructively about anything that came to mind. At the end of 2 weeks, each trainee, without exception, reported the experience proved amazingly practical and worthwhile. One fellow stated that before the managed solitude experiment, he was on the verge of a sharp break with another company executive. But through clear thinking, he found the source of the problem and the way to correct it. Others reported that they solved problems relating to such varied things as changing jobs, marriage difficulties, buying a home, and selecting a college for a teenage child. Each trainee enthusiastically reported that he had gained a much better understanding of himself, his strengths and weaknesses, than he had ever had before. The trainees also discovered something else that is tremendously significant. They discovered that decisions and observations made alone in managed solitude have an uncanny way of being 100% right. The trainees discovered that when the fog is lifted, the right choice becomes crystal clear. Managed solitude pays off. One day recently, an associate of mine reversed her stand completely on a troublesome issue. I was curious to know why she had switched her thinking, since the problem was very basic. Her answer went like this. "Well, I haven't been at all clear in my mind as to what we should do. So I got up at 3:30 this morning, fixed a cup of coffee, and just sat on the sofa and thought until 7 a.m. I see the whole matter a lot clearer now, so the only thing for me to do is reverse my stand." And her new stand proved completely correct. Resolve now to set aside some time each day, at least 30 minutes, to be completely by yourself. Perhaps early in the morning before anyone else is stirring about would be best for you. Or perhaps late in the evening would be a better time. The important thing is to select a time when your mind is fresh and when you can be free from distractions. You can use this time to do two types of thinking, directed and undirected. To do directed thinking, review the major problem facing you. In solitude, your mind will study the problem objectively and lead you to the right answer. To do undirected thinking, just let your mind select what it wishes to think about. In moments like these, your subconscious mind taps your memory bank, which in turn feeds your conscious mind. Undirected thinking is very helpful in doing self-evaluation. It helps you get down to the very basic matters, like, how can I do better? What should be my next move? Remember, the main job of the leader is thinking. And the best preparation for leadership is thinking. Spend some time in managed solitude every day and think yourself to success. Summary. To be a more effective leader, put these four leadership principles to work. 1. Trade minds with the people you want to influence. It's easy to get others to do what you want them to do if you'll see things through their eyes. Ask yourself this question before you act. What would I think of this if I exchanged places with the other person? 2. Apply the be human rule in your dealings with others. Ask, what is the human way to handle this? In everything you do, show that you put other people first. Just give other people the kind of treatment you like to receive. You'll be rewarded. 3. Think progress, believe in progress, push for progress. Think improvement in everything you do. Think high standards in everything you do. Over a period of time, subordinates tend to become carbon copies of their chief. Be sure the master copy is worth duplicating. Make this a personal resolution. At home, at work, in community life, if it's progress, I'm for it. 4. Take time out to confer with yourself and tap your supreme thinking power. Managed solitude pays off. Use it to release your creative power. Use it to find solutions to personal and business problems. So spend some time alone every day just for thinking. Use the thinking technique all great leaders use. Confer with yourself. How to use the magic of thinking big in life's most crucial situations. There is magic in thinking big, but it is so easy to forget. When you hit some rough spots, there is danger that your thinking will shrink in size, and when it does, you lose. Here are some brief guides for staying big when you're tempted to use the small approach. Perhaps you'll want to put these guides on small cards for even handier reference. A. When little people try to drive you down, think big. To be sure, there are some people who want you to lose, to experience misfortune, to be reprimanded. But these people can't hurt you if you'll remember three things. 1. You win when you refuse to fight petty people. Fighting little people reduces you to their size. Stay big. 2. Expect to be sniped at. It's proof you're growing. 3. Remind yourself that snipers are psychologically sick. Be big. Feel sorry for them. Think big enough to be immune to the attacks of petty people. B. When that "I haven't got what it takes" feeling creeps up on you, think big. Remember, if you think you are weak, you are. If you think you're inadequate, you are. If you think you're second class, you are. Whip that natural tendency to sell yourself short with these tools. 1. Look important. It helps you think important. How you look on the outside has a lot to do with how you feel on the inside. 2. Concentrate on your assets. Build a sell-yourself-to-yourself commercial and use it. Learn to supercharge yourself. Know your positive self. 3. Put other people in proper perspective. The other person is just another human being, so why be afraid of him? Think big enough to see how good you really are. C. When an argument or quarrel seems inevitable, think big. Successfully resist the temptation to argue and quarrel by 1. Asking yourself, honestly now, is this thing really important enough to argue about? 2. Reminding yourself you never gain anything from an argument, but you always lose something. Think big enough to see that quarrels, arguments, feuds, and fusses will never help you get where you want to go. D. When you feel defeated, think big. It is not possible to achieve large success without hardships and setbacks, but it is possible to live the rest of your life without defeat. Big thinkers react to setbacks this way. 1. Regard the setback as a lesson. Research it. Use it to propel you forward. Salvage something from every setback. 2. Blend persistence with experimentation. Back off and start afresh with a new approach. Think big enough to see that defeat is a state of mind, nothing more. E. When romance starts to slip, think big. Negative, petty, she's, he's, unfair to me so I'll get even type of thinking slaughters romance, destroys the affection that can be yours. Do this when things aren't going right in the love department. 1. Concentrate on the biggest qualities in the person you want to love you. Put little things where they belong, in second place. 2. Do something special for your mate, and do it often. Think big enough to find the secret to marital joys. F. When you feel your progress on the job is slowing down, think big. No matter what you do, and regardless of your occupation, higher status, higher pay come from one thing: increasing the quality and quantity of your output. Do this. Think, I can do better. The best is not unattainable. There is room for doing everything better. Nothing in this world is being done as well as it could be. And when you think, I can do better, ways to do better will appear. Thinking I can do better switches on your creative power. Think big enough to see that if you put service first, money takes care of itself. In the words of Publilius Syrus, a wise man will be master of his mind, a fool will be its slave.
The Magic of Thinking Big was written by David Schwartz and read by Jason Culp. It was recorded at Kessler Media Productions in Katona, New York. The mix engineer was Alex Reisdorf. Editing and post-production by Kessler Media Productions. The associate producer was Michael Noble. The Magic of Thinking Big was produced and directed by Robert Kessler. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Magic of Thinking Big is available in print from Touchstone.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.